welcome to the Friday TYT postgame. I am your host, Malcolm Fleshner, with, of course, Steve-O and Dave Kohler. We are recording this on, that's right, you guessed it, April 20th, Thursday, even though you're not watching on April 20th, but we're celebrating 420, and we hope you can continue to celebrate with us, as you hopefully have been even since Thursday.
Totally true, totally bullshit. It is exactly 420 right now.
Somewhere.
That's right.
No.
It's totally true.
In 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Right now. So that's exciting. And we celebrated 420 here at the studio a little bit. There were with donuts. I missed them, but there were donuts.
I missed the donuts too. I just got in.
There were donuts. I kind of feel that this whole 420 thing is a little overblown.
Especially with this crowd. I've never been high. Ever.
You've never smoked pot in your life?
I tried a couple of times, but I don't know how to smoke.
Dave, any past history with the marijuana?
Yeah, the most memorable effect was not smoking, it was eating brownies.
So you
brownies.
Like once or multiple times?
And it had an incredibly strong effect.
Yeah, and had you ever smoked or never?
Yeah,
a couple times. But nothing really.
So I was talking to a friend of mine. She wants to do something new and different because, you know, we're hitting our midlife crisis.
Yeah.
So her thing is she wants to jump out of an airplane. She wants to do, you know, she wants to go parachuting. And I was like, you're nuts. And she asked me what I wanted to do. I was like, maybe just get high. I've never been high before. I can't smoke it, so I just try a pop brownie or something or a cookie or whatever.
Well, the problem with that is it lasts longer. So if you're disinclined towards it, then you got to suffer through it for a longer period of time. Do you know anybody who does, who could get you any? I mean, it's, you know, tough to come by here at the TYT studio. I don't think anybody on staff knows or...
Is it legal or illegal? Look, I'm the jackass who refused to drink alcohol in college because it was illegal. I wasn't 21 yet. So I drink it in Toronto because it was legal because drinking age is 19.
Right, so just the legality. By the way, these shirts
idiot.
I think are available at TYT. Dave was unfamiliar with it, but this is, you know, in honor of the day, I believe they are available in TYT, you know, shoptyt.com. I have no personal experience with marijuana myself, except for most of my high school and college experience every day. But other than that,
really?
Not every day, but I mean a fair amount. Oh yeah, no, I mean, like listening to Jenk's stories about becoming a pot smoker in his 40s. It's like it takes me back to like when I was 15 and getting high with my friends and just giggling and all that sort of thing. And
all right, so time to throw Jenk under the bus. This guy, what's his problem? Every time he tries something new, he can't stop talking about it. So he's a late bloomer. He's a late start on everything. So when he first started drinking, which is even later than me, he can shut up about it. Like, oh, I'm so drunk. Shut up. Nobody cares if you're drunk. I mean, that's cool when you're 15 or 16. It's not even cool then.
But that's what you do.
Yeah, that's what you do, right? And then he started drinking coffee in his like mid-30s. Like, oh, coffee. Oh, I'm so wired, man. I'm so wired because of coffee. If I don't have coffee, I get a headache. Oh, I'm addicted to coffee. Holy shit, guys, coffee.
You guys could never have known.
I'm like, Jenk, you're an idiot. Everyone drinks coffee. Just calm down. And then he's like, oh, pot. Oh, I was so high. I was seeing like red stuff blinking and talking to me. Then I thanked the ocean. Jenk, nobody cares.
We've all been high.
But still, nobody cares.
Did an interview with an author named Daniel Pinchbeck, who has written about going to like Nigeria and doing all sorts of crazy, you know, drugs for all over the world. And Jenk was interviewing him, and he's like, oh, I've smoked pot, but I don't know, those psychedelics, I don't know, because me on pot, that's crazy, man. I get, and I was just like watching, I was like, and somebody we know watched it and emailed me to say, I had no idea Jenk was such a square. And I'm like, yeah. I mean, the author, Daniel Pinder, must have been just like, oh, God, you know, because he's not, you know, not expecting that from this, you know, 40-something-year-old guy to be talking like he's 17.
But he's so Johnny-come-lately on all these things. And then once he discovers it, he can't stop talking about things that everyone else has known for decades. It's fantastic.
Well, I was thinking, actually, I mean, personally, I think 420 has gotten a little too commercial. You know, I mean, you know, I miss the purity of the holiday. But I was thinking that maybe TYT should do the same thing with 420 that like Fox News and Bill O'Reilly, the late Bill O'Reilly, him, may rest in peace, did with Christmas, and we could talk about the war on 420 because they're actually, you know, Jeff Sessions is actually launching a war on marijuana, pot smoking, or, you know, drugs in general, and it would be much more legitimate than the nonsense war on Christmas. It would, you know, an actual thing, but. Anyway, so we all got it. One day, I know you've really encouraged this, and we'll do it. We'll all get high on camera, and you know. No, we won't. We won't do that. That's not going to be happening. Just kidding. But it would be fun. It would be. But I'm.
Gigi's into it though. Gigi always try to. She's always trying to get us drunk or high in something. She's a bad influence on all of us.
Maybe she brings us back something from the Middle East. You know, something really. Definitely try to smuggle some drugs into the country next time you come back, Gigi. That's a great idea.
What could go wrong?
Yeah. Let's move on. Now the first thing we're going to do is what I like to call annoying feedback with Steve, and because Steve is going to read some of your comments back. But first, we have a graphic that I created, and I believe Irma, can you bring that up for us? There it is. Feedback with Steve-O. Maybe I'll add it with Steve-O next time.
All right, that girl is better looking than me. All right, anyway, last week for the post game, we talked about this this issue that I have with who do I send on this mission to refugee camps.
Right. There's a lot of discussion about
it. And I looked at the comments to see if there was any helpful
comments.
Some
of them are really thoughtful.
So kudos to you guys. There's a lot of good comments in here. So I went through and read almost all the comments, which it was fun actually to read the comments. I'm going to do it more often. So I'm going to read some of the comments here. So Reba writes, that was actually a good post game, even without Malcolm giving it structure. Dave got to talk a little more than usual. Obviously, everyone was super motivated to go to that refugee camp trip. So putting everyone except Haas's name in a hat and picking it that way might be okay. Haas needs to be given less to do, not more.
Pretty direct, man.
Although you think some people would be happy to have him sent out of the country.
And then Reba continues, I got a kick out of how happy Steve was over Kelly's comment. Yes, Reba, I was very happy about it. And then Max Bonvillian, his comment is too long. It's too good. It's too good. So Max, you're being punished for your own success. Bunch of people want Jordan to go there. A lot of votes for Naomi Konst.
A lot of votes for Hannah. Like reasons for each of them to go.
They're all good reasons. Yeah, they're all good reasons. Let me read.
Because Francis was going to go and play soccer with them, teach them soccer. Haas is going to go and teach them how to do shots. I mean, there's all sorts of opportunities.
That's right. Can Am Heather, right? I don't know what that means. Can Am Heather. Steve, you are super adorable.
Yeah. Now we know why you actually wanted to read these comments. Yeah.
I love that you are the brains of the business, but also an aggressive progressive. Heather is nailing it. She writes, regarding refugee camps, I totally agree with Ruka Ravaglia's comments above about Hassan. You can't send him. It would be a terrible disservice to such a serious topic. He just doesn't have the life experience to give it the respect and sensitivity that story deserves. Hannah is the same, too young and lacking in serious experience. I'm torn between Jordan and Naomi. I think you need to give it to someone who is already one of the two IT politics reporters. I would actually love for it to be Dylan Radigan, but his name wasn't mentioned. Yeah, I can't send Dylan. All right, so here's another one. Okay, Amy Ecarrier, she writes, Steve, interesting regarding that Jordan Cheriton quote you cherry-picked to represent his thinking and interest in the project. Somehow, I doubt that remark would have been the only thing that this articulate man had to say. She goes on to say some more critical things about me. Then she says, frankly, your representation of all the TYT employees seemed unprofessional. Good thing you're not an agent. All of this makes me wonder if you and others might be harboring some professional jealousy of Jordan, which would be both sad and unfortunate for TYT.
Yeah, now I read that one, and what she's referring to is you had said that Jordan put his name in the hat and said, look, I've been to a lot of tough places and reported from, and I think she was perceived as you were thinking that Jordan was saying, I deserve this because I deserve a vacation or something, I get to go somewhere else. But I think he was saying, I've done this sort of thing all across the United States. Now I want to do the same thing I did domestically, internationally. So I think she may have been misinterpreting what you were saying.
Okay, so this comment cracked me up because the thought of me being jealous of Jordan, trying to undermine him on air. So why? Because I want to go. It's an odd comment. So Amy, rest assured, I am not jealous of Jordan. I'm one of Jordan's biggest supporters, and Jordan and I text back and forth whenever he has an issue with other people in the company. So there's no issue here. Perhaps the way I described Jordan's pitch to me was I gave a short shrift. I'm not here to advocate for each of them. And you are correct, I am not their agent. I'm not, okay? Although I do, you know, advocate for them. And one of the reasons why John Iadarola is going on that great trip to the North Pole is because, like an agent, I got that gig for him. So Amy, you're mostly wrong on this one, but I appreciate your feedback.
It's great that people think that Jordan does such a terrific job that we would be jealous of him.
But you know, I'm glad people have a high opinion of Jordan, but it's a weird thing to say that. You know, I mean,
I think she misinterpreted what you said and was looking for some justification
of why you didn't say that. It was weird. Okay. All right, so we're not jealous of Jordan. We love Jordan. He's great.
He's another aggressive progressive. We got to keep as many of those around as we can.
He is. All right.
Aggressive progressives yesterday, didn't you think? Steve, you weren't there for it, but I
was there.
I thought Jimmy and I, you were?
I was there. Yeah, my daughter's event was switched up, so I went. Yeah.
Well, great. You did a great job, I'm sure.
Okay.
And so did I.
There's a comment here about me and Dave that I wanted to read.
Should we chit-chat amongst ourselves, get the camera on us, and Dave? So
there's this breaking news that there's a shooting in Paris, which we, of course, don't know anything about.
Right, but
we acknowledge that it might have happened.
So, yeah, that big story that everyone's talking
about. They talked about
it. That we're not talking about, and you're like, why aren't they? Yeah. It's, it wasn't
as important as these comments. All right, I got it. Okay, so GeoForms writes, because also in the postgame, Dave and I talked about how we don't want to go on that 30-day trip to the North Pole on a sailboat where you eat nothing but granola bars and dried fruits and dehydrated meats.
Pemmican.
And you got to use dry shampoo and you don't have hot water. Anyway, GeoForm says, Steve and Dave, you guys have no sense of real adventure. That trip to the Arctic sounds freaking awesome. 1 month is nothing. And the time would pass pretty quickly. Next thing you know, you're back in the world having to deal with regular life again. What do you think? He's kind of right.
Yeah.
He or she is kind
of
right.
Depend on the time of your life. Why would you leave your wife and three kids for a month to do that?
It's not just that. There's a certain selfishness to it because it's not like there's no impact on my family if I leave. I mean, if it was just up to me, if I didn't have a family, I'd go.
Of course, I would.
Yeah. But you can't just go because that means my wife has to deal with all the kid issues. And with three kids, a lot of issues.
But what you were implying was you've gotten soft a little bit. And
that part's also true.
That this is worse than just sort of like camping or something. This is facing,
even camping for 30 days sounds horrible.
Camping for 30 days does sound horrible.
Yeah.
We're soft and old. There's no question.
True.
About
That's
that.
Why I'm wearing this short sleeve button down shirt that Malcolm likes to wear. It means I'm a dad. I just don't care about fashion anymore. That's what it means.
You've given up.
I've given up.
Yeah.
Given up.
Well, there was one comment that said that I thought was amusing was like, you said you could send John because he's single. But John talked about having a girlfriend. Wait a minute, what's the real story here?
It's okay. Feminique writes, I need clarification on something. Steve O says at 7:29 that John is single. However, a few post games back, John made references to, quote, my girlfriend Arlene. A friend of mine have a bet that him and Hannah are in love, have been together since Think Tank. Okay.
There's a lot in there.
There's a lot in there.
Arlene does sound made up.
Okay. No, Arlene
is named Arlene.
Arlene is real. It's a real girlfriend. What I meant by single he's not married. That's what I meant. Okay. So my mistake, I misspoke. Regarding him and Hannah, they're not in love and they've not been together since Think Tank. It's just dead good on air chemistry. That's it.
Yeah, if anything were to happen, it would ruin it, just like on Moonlighting.
Yeah, and by the way, if anything were to happen, I'm sure they'd tell me all about it.
Yeah.
Right, so I don't know. But from what I know, they're not in love.
Yeah. As far as we know, John and Hannah, I mean, they love their work and they love to work with each other. But so you have any thoughts on any of these comments or?
They're good. I want to read the one that was too long to read. That's the first thing I want to do when we get off here.
All right. So keep the comments coming, guys. I'm going to pick a few and read them on air from now on.
All right. So I want to move on to give you an update on the Niger Delta Avengers. We have not discussed in months, and I feel remiss about that. Earlier, Tim Collins, one of our coworkers, came up to me and said, the Niger Delta Avengers, I forget, are they good or bad? And I was like, all that matters is they have an awesome name. So the deal is that there's been basically a truce in Nigeria and between the Niger Delta Avengers and the government for a number of months now, and it's held. And the oil production is starting to climb again in Nigeria, which is the point that everybody wants. I mean, it's not good for the environment necessarily, but for the economy of Nigeria. As you know, the Niger Delta Avengers had, and other militant groups had been detonating bombs and attacking various oil installations around the Niger Delta area and crippling the oil production for the country, which, and it's not like Nigeria can afford it because that's where the bulk of their income comes from. So as far as I know, we know it's held till now. The oil output actually hit a low. They're our friends, the Niger Delta Avengers. And oil output hit such a low that Angola bypassed Nigeria as the largest producer of oil in Africa. But Nigeria is back up. And the part of it that I thought was interesting that I wanted to mention is that a representative from the NDA a few months ago, before the truce went into effect and has held. He said he declared the commencement of Operation Walls of Jericho and Operation Hurricane Joshua to quote unquote reclaim our motherland and dislodge all cleavages the Nigerian ruling oligarchy has foisted on the region. So I bring that up because it's not just the Niger Delta Avengers and other groups who have great names. They also give, they're a militant group and they give great names to their initiatives. Yeah, their Operation Walls of Jericho and Operation Hurricane Joshua. I mean, that's, they're going biblical.
Yeah. Now, the walls of Jericho were knocked down. So that's what they're talking about, knocking down the walls?
Well, I mean, who knows what, but also, I believe, wasn't it Joshua who knocked down the walls of Jericho?
So it's the same thing.
Yeah. But apparently, the Niger Delta Avengers don't really trust the president, Buhari, but they do trust the vice president, Yemi Osinbajo, who has been responsible for communicating with them and negotiating it. And so as far as we can tell, that's the things are progressing. But it's at any moment it can, I'm sure, they can break the truce if they stop paying them off or the negotiations break down. So we will keep you updated on this critical, critical story.
And so Malcolm, I'm going to say that you are the number one person in TYT in terms of how well you pronounce foreign leaders' names.
it's a niche.
It's a travesty here. Okay, so pronounce Shinzo, and his last name is spelled A-B-E. How would you pronounce Shinzo's last name?
Well, but do people say Abe?
Yes! Jake and Anna both said Abe.
They both say Abe?
They both said Abe. I was like, oh my God. Yeah.
No, that is, well, it's partly having heard it before and repeating it. But listen, Cenk does a lot better with the Turkish names than I do. I was trying to pronounce Öcalan's name, the Kurdish separatist, mm-hmm. and apparently it's not Öcalan. That's not right.
But even the Turks pronounce their own names differently from one another sometimes.
I don't trust them, actually, frankly, and you shouldn't either. They're conniving people. And also, every time they do something new, they just want to talk about it constantly. That's the way Turks are, as far as I can tell. So, all right, moving on. Now we also have some sad news coming, as always, from Dave Kohler, who is the Friday Post game equivalent to the Grim Reaper delivering the bad news of somebody's death. And who are we talking about today?
We're talking about someone who's actually not obscure at all. Robert Taylor is one of the key innovators of everything we know about personal computers and the internet. Robert Taylor was trained, there he is. He died in his 80s, he had a long, productive life. He was not an engineer or computer scientist or anything. He mostly studied psychology and specialized in human interactions with computers. And everyone's heard some of these stories of where these PC innovations came from, but he is the guy at the center of all of them. So in the early 60s, he was working at NASA and he was directing a group and he eventually steered them and steered funds toward them so that he could develop the computer mouse or prototype of it. Then he went to the Department of Defense, and this is the Pentagon, and this is the famous, everyone knows the story of how the internet came out of the Pentagon. It was he who...
I thought Al Gore invented it.
Right. We all thought that. He is the guy who administered and convinced his superior to redirect funds away from a ballistic missile program to a computer networking program so that they could have better communications within the Pentagon. They did that. They created a network and then eventually...
When are we talking? What's the time frame?
This is mid-60s, 1966 or so. After leaving the Pentagon, Robert Taylor went to Xerox and he worked at their Palo Alto research facility. And that's where they developed the idea for
the PC as we know it today, and the interactions with it, the laser printer, and a couple other innovations. It's famously Steve Jobs visited that lab and stole all the ideas. But everyone stole it. That's what the Windows computers are based on. But it all came out of that lab, that innovative lab at Xerox that Robert Taylor ran. And then that group just kind of ran out of steam through the 70s. And then by 83, he was replaced.
They were all like, yeah, this internet's not going anywhere. Anyway.
And then he just rode out his life happily, I'm sure, in Northern California. But you can't in any way underestimate the impact of these innovations. Everything we do, especially at this company, which is based on the internet and computers, is all working on Robert Taylor's innovations.
Okay, so Robert Taylor, who else is on the internet
thing?
Or the Mount Rushmore of the information age for you?
There's a guy with a long German name who was really instrumental in inventing computer networking. And I've talked about him once years ago on one of these shows. But I would put him on.
Okay,
I think
German
he was a UCLA
name.
Professor.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, maybe MIT. You got to put the Tim Berners-Lee,
okay,
who invented the World Wide Web. And I think the guy, the Netflix guy, maybe Andreessen.
Andreessen, so not Bill Gates, not Steve Jobs.
Not in my Mount Rushmore.
Larry Ellison.
No.
Okay, all right. Mark Andreessen.
They're doing the fundamental stuff that then you could build all the other, everything else.
He was with Netscape, wasn't he?
Yeah, Netscape.
Yeah.
What
all
did
right.
I say? Yeah,
well, Netscape. That would be a good question for you guys. You know more about this stuff than I do. Who are your, who's in your Hall of Fame? Your
Internet
Hall of Fame. They should have one. That should be a thing.
It probably is, but that is a great thing. We'll check that out.
Anyway, okay, so
Robert
that's Taylor.
Taylor. Got to be a unanimous first ballot.
First
he's
ballot.
No Phil Rizzuto. Yeah, Hall of Fame.
I don't know. He weren't there allegations of steroids? He was, some of the late 70s maybe. He was juicing. all right, well, let's move on. So now we love to play games, and unlike those online personal ads where they say no game playing. We love to play games here, and the first one we're going to play is Weekly World News, which I believe we have an intro for. Weekly World News! Gotta love it, gotta love it. And so the way we play, in case you haven't seen the show before, is I cull from the internet stories around the world that are interesting or compelling for some reason, and then I present them in the form of a quiz to Dave and Steve and try to guess which is the real story, multiple choice, and which are the ones that are made up, or just try to guess the real one. I'm confident you guys are going to do really well this week. I know
It's amazing how we defy the odds and get so many more wrong than we should.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
Yeah. And I will try to remember to read the answer for those of you who are podcasting, which I have forgotten to do in the past. But so let's go to the first one, which comes to us from Chile. Where's Chile? Where is that? There it is, that sliver of a country on the western side of South America. Dave, you've been, I assume.
I haven't been.
Never been to Chile?
What? I'm shocked.
Yeah, it's shocking.
I'm shocked and chagrined.
And we had a lighting change while we were here, or is that just because? Oh, it's just because of the background. Okay, we got rid of all the pot leaves. All right, so the first question, Irma, bring it on up for us. What is it? From Chile. Financial experts suggest that Chile's economy may soon fall into a recession because of what? Is it A, a ripple effect of the Venezuelan economic crisis? B, a collapse in the fishing industry caused by dwindling fish stocks in the southern Pacific? C, a prolonged strike by a group of copper miners? Or D, excessive spending on the president's frequent trips to Mar-a-Lago? Didn't know that the president of Chile was spending a lot of time in Mar-a-Lago, but maybe it's true. So what's it going to be? What's it going to be for these gentlemen? What are they? We have an answer from Dave. Says B. Steve says C.
I don't think it's B because.
Well, bring up what the answers are so we can see. People can see what we're talking about. Please, Irma. Not the correct answer, but the list of answers. Please. So you don't think it's the fishing industry?
Because lately, at restaurants, they have Chilean sea bass back on the menu. For a long time, it was off the menu.
It may not be coming from Chile.
But they're called Chilean sea bass.
Yeah, names can be deceiving. But then
I don't think it's C because copper mines in Chile is the standard that's been part of their history for 50 years. So Malcolm just, because he knows that, he put it in there.
Okay, so we have.
It's going to be A. Go ahead.
So yeah, these are our answers. We're stuck with C and with B, correct?
Yeah, you can't change
your answer. Bring it up, Irma. What's the correct answer? The correct answer is C, a prolonged strike by a group of copper miners.
Nailed it.
I'm so proud of you, Steve. I can't tell you. All right, so what's the story on this?
I think it's hilarious. I knew the answer. I knew that it wasn't B. And A seemed too obvious.
Same too, like Malcolm put it there, because he knows that that's the central part of Chilean economy.
You overthought it. You didn't underthink it. You thought it just right.
I was like, I went to a restaurant recently. I saw Chilean sea bass. The fishing industry must be booming.
See, this is like Dave Kohler's America, where you actually have to provide a reason for your answer, even if it's tenuous at best. It's a thin filament, as it were. So Chile's longest mining strike since 1973 took place. It ended last month. It was 43 days long, but in Chile, copper mining accounts for a fifth of the national mine that they were striking accounts for about a fifth of national copper production and almost 2% of the whole country's GDP. And as a result, the economy in Chile contracted 0.4% in the final quarter of 2016. And it was a strike over pay, but they resolved it. But there was $1 billion worth of lost production. And but it's going to have potentially a ripple effect on upcoming presidential election, because the right wing candidate, that right now they've got a sort of a centrist leftist government under Michelle Bachelet, I guess is her name.
Yeah.
And the she's being challenged by Sebastián Piñera, who
preceded
was
her.
Well, exactly, he
but preceded,
she preceded
her him.
And she, but they, those were comparatively prosperous times, and there is concern that because of this mining strike that will doom the governing party, Michelle Bachelet's party, and her successor, whose name I've forgotten, but Guillier, I guess is, I don't know how you pronounce it, Guillier, it's a Guillier. So he's going to have to try to distance himself from this unpopular government, and it's going to be harder and harder the worse the economy is there, and ongoing street protests and all that sort of thing. But I thought this was interesting, was that Rodrigo Valdez, Chile's finance minister, blames the economic contraction on one-off factors, including the worst forest fires in Chile's history in January, which hit growth by 0.2 to 0.3 percentage points. So basically what that says to me is, if you're a politician, you will find anything, whatever reason you need to blame the other guy or some external factor for your failings. Or maybe they're not your fault, but these could be just the waxes and waning of an economy, and it's not really the governing party's fault, but they will get blamed for it. But if he's going to try to pin it on forest fires. He'd never been to Chile. Do you want to go? We should send you on a fact-finding mission.
But it goes back to the discussion we had earlier. The reason I loved going to Latin America is that I felt so free and carefree and lack of no responsibility. I could just go and discover things. And now I can't do that, even if I went.
Yeah. So you want to go back to being in your 20s again.
It's basically, not that I want to travel in geography.
You go to San Bernardino as long as you don't have to worry about car payments and insurance and mortgages and all that sort of thing. Yeah, all right. Any thoughts on the Chilean miners? Well, the other thing I wanted to comment is that I didn't hear about this strike. I had no idea. I assume you didn't either, and it was not news. Although it was a huge strike in Chile, but so if these guys had wanted to get more media attention, they should have struck by going back down into a mine and getting trapped there, because that's the only time you hear about Chilean miners in the United States.
I always assume there's a copper mining strike in Chile. That's like a constant state of affairs over there.
You mean it's like a transportation strike in France,
right,
just ongoing, that's just part of the cost of doing business. Yeah, but this was apparently a pretty big one. All right, so for our next story, we're going to an obscure country you probably haven't even heard of. It's called Canada. I don't know. Do we have an image of it?
Canada.
Canada?
Canada.
That's what Cenk calls it, Canada. There it is, a tiny little country just nestled there north of the United States. And what is the question that comes to us from Canada? I will tell you now, it is as follows. It's a lovely country. Hudson Bay looks bigger than it really is. Where is that question? Irma, it's got to be, you got to have it somewhere. There it is. A Canadian woman has been charged with a crime for attempting to smuggle what into Canada from the United States? Is it A, MRI machines, B, refugees, C, a baby hippopotamus, or D, counterfeit Canadian tire money?
I don't get the joke.
Do you not know what Canadian tire money is? Oh, it's...
And the fake one should have been a medium rare hamburger.
because you're not allowed to have that in Canada.
That's even more rare to me than
a rare hamburger.
You're not allowed to order hamburgers rare in Canada?
No.
Like, what happens to you?
They don't have them on the menu. I mean, the chef won't cook it.
This is a universal across Canada?
Yeah.
Okay, if you say so. I don't know. So we have an answer, Steve. We need an answer.
Yeah, I have an answer.
Okay. What are our answers? We have one B and an A. Boy, what is it going to be? Okay, Irma, what is it?
A is the correct answer.
What is the correct?
There's no
correct
way
answer
know.
Is B, refugees. Steve is 2 for 2. I was right. I was half right.
It's a new day.
Just too strong, Dave.
All right, so I'm
breaking Dave like a little boy today. Sorry, Dave.
Steve is liking this game more and more.
This game finally got good. Yeah. It sucked for so many weeks. It's finally good now.
Well, let's reserve judgment. We're not done yet. Okay, so a woman by
I've already gotten the high score ever for me.
A woman by the name of Michelle Omoroyi, a Canadian resident, was arrested for facilitating illegal crossings of foreign nationals from the United States. And in recent months, more than 1,000 asylum seekers have braved freezing temperatures, fields of waist-deep snow, and icy rivers to cross into Canada from the U.S. by foot. And what's going on is there are, I guess, 1,860 asylum seekers in the recent months. And they enter the country at remote, unguarded locations because they're fleeing Donald Trump's crackdown in the United States on immigrants. And they're looking to skirt a long-standing pact that bars most refugee claimants in the U.S. from applying for asylum in Canada. There's this 2004 pact that I didn't know about, and I'm guessing you guys didn't know about, called the Safe Third Country Agreement, that forces most migrants to apply for asylum in the first country in which they arrive. So if you come from Syria, you land in the United States, you have to apply in the United States, you can't apply in Canada. And so advocates on both sides
What's the rationale for that?
Let me read it. It says advocates on both sides of the border have long urged the Canadian government to suspend the agreement, warning that it leaves asylum seekers looking to enter Canada from the U.S. with little choice but to resort to hazardous journeys, and it creates this incentive for smugglers and people, to take advantage of them. And I mean, I'm sure there's a rationale, but it probably was just for simplicity's sake, when the United States and Canada both had roughly similar policies about accepting refugees. But now the United States policy has changed dramatically. This has become obsolete, but it is incentivizing people who come here first to say, "Oh shit, they're not going to accept me, and I'm going to try to sneak into Canada." And we have this, multiple thousands of miles long unguarded border where you can, it's easy to cross as long as you can get there and then have someone pick you up. But these smugglers are doing it for financial reasons. They raided their apartments or whatever, and they found a lot of cash and so on and so forth. And they're doing it for money. They're not doing it as a humanitarian gesture, because people who do smuggle humans for humanitarian reasons are not typically charged with a crime. But this is one of the sort of ripple effects of Donald Trump's presidency, that it's forcing people. We think of people crossing the southern border of the United States to come to the United States for work or whatever, or braving going across the desert or crossing the Mediterranean, these boats that capsize and so on and so forth. But now we've got people leaving the United States to go to Canada and risking death potentially also if they, are freezing to death or who knows what. We're contributing to, we're making the refugee crisis even worse for people after they've arrived here. So that's just an extra bonus, the little cherry on top of the Trump shit Sunday of our immigration policy.
All right, the important part is that I got both questions right.
All right, number three. We're going back to Nigeria for number three. Where's Nigeria?
Really?
Yes. Yeah. We don't just report on the Niger Delta Avengers. We have all sorts of important Nigeria news we cover. So where is Nigeria? There it is. It's a pretty sizable country there in West Africa.
I didn't know it was that far west. I thought it was a little bit more east. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, it's got to be on the ocean because it's the largest. The Delta is, one of the largest. It's probably the largest in Africa. I don't know, comparable to Nile Delta at least. Anyway, so all right. Question number three: Nigerians were shocked after police discovered what in an otherwise unoccupied Lagos apartment? Was it A, a cache containing hundreds of stacks of U.S. currency totaling $43 million. B, detailed plans for a series of attacks on oil installations by the Niger Delta Avengers. C, boxes weighing hundreds of kilos containing over 70,000 Viagra pills. Or D, a naked, quivering Bill O'Reilly repeatedly muttering to himself, "Tide goes in, tide goes out."
That D answer is a really good one this time.
Timely. Topical humor. That's what you get from Weekly World News. Important world events and topical humor. The question, was I doing a misdirection about my Niger Delta Avengers story and saying that we cover other things? Who knows? Only you all will find out soon enough. So what are our answers? Dave is saying A, and Steve is saying A. The correct answer, Irma, is A. 3 for 3.
This game is too easy.
Wait, I gotta read it what it is, Irma. A cache containing hundreds of stacks of U.S. currency totaling $43 million. That's the correct answer for those of you podcasting at home or in your car or wherever. So, okay, so what's the story? I found this fascinating, although it's a little depressing. So, yeah, they found these stacks of hundreds of neatly wrapped bundles in the filing cabinets and wardrobes of an empty apartment in Nigeria's biggest city. And it was there was a raid made by Nigeria's anti-corruption agency. But the weird twist is later on, the National Spy Agency of Nigeria claimed ownership, said that money's ours.
Of course.
And President Buhari has now ordered a formal investigation and suspended the spy agency's director. But he also suspended another top civil servant. Steve, you're gonna be shocked about this. Another top civil servant in connection with a corruption probe into government relief funds for a humanitarian crisis in northeast Nigeria. So suggesting that this money isn't just skimmed off the top from the oil companies, but it's taken from money that has been donated for humanitarian purposes to help the suffering people of Nigeria. There, speaking of which, 4.7 million people in northeast Nigeria are desperately short of food and on the brink of famine, and that's where a lot of this relief money has been intended for. But in recent weeks, the anti-corruption agency that found this money has also found millions of dollars in U.S. and Nigerian currency in other locations around the country, and this is a long practice of corruption in Nigeria, all different kinds of corruption. But in 2015, Buhari alleged that government officials had looted more than $2 billion in funds intended for weapons to fight Boko Haram, the Islamic terrorist group. Mm-hmm. And he said the money disappeared into fictitious and phantom military contracts in which the ammunition and equipment was never provided. So it's like one of these double whammy stories where not only is there this terrible corruption going on and ministers and various people, officials lining their pockets, but it's supposed to be money not going to buy weapons or not going to buy oil, but directly to help people. So sometimes you think, why is Boko Haram still able to operate with near impunity in Nigeria? Well, maybe it's because all that money that's supposed to be fighting them, and why all these people continue to suffer and risk famine, well, that humanitarian money is not getting to them because it's in the pockets of. And so, but that's if you take all this at face value. Maybe Buhari is corrupt too, and he's just covering, criticizing somebody else, and he's really corrupt himself. There's nothing really to suggest that, but you can never assume anything that anybody is clean,
right?
In these sort of situations. But so that's what's going on in Nigeria. But just $43 million in a random apartment in Lagos. I heard it's a very expensive city to live in, but that seems excessive. All right, question number 4, we're going to Lesotho. Where on earth is Lesotho? That's right, it's landlocked and surrounded entirely by South Africa. That's the little red dot, that is Lesotho. And the question is this. What is the Lesotho government's stated purpose for a recent crackdown on social media? Is it A, to curb the spread of fake news? B, to improve government workers' efficiency? C, to make it more difficult for teenagers to arrange sexual liaisons? Or D, to punish citizens who fail to like the prime minister's vacation photos? Do, 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 do. I'm getting to like this music. This is a challenging one. Steve, now you've got an unbroken record. You're going to try to go for 5 for 5. It's going to be tough.
How many did I get right in a row?
3.
3?
Also unlikely.
Yeah.
Wait, we have our answers?
Yes.
Dave has his and Steve has his. We have B from Dave and C from Steve. What is the correct answer, Irma? Correct answer is A, to curb the spread of fake news. Oh, sorry. You guys are doing so well. The Weekly World News giveth, Weekly World News taketh away. All right, so what's going on? Lesotho is going to introduce a new cybersecurity law to regulate the use of social media and to stem the peddling of what government considers as misinformation that threatens stability in the conflict-stricken kingdom. So on Facebook, the most powerful is an anti-government group called Countdown to Elections, 2017, more than 56,000 members, and it's dominated by posts of one unidentified character, only known as Makaolo Kalo, which is you know, I may not be pronouncing that right, who knows. But he's, you know, he's renowned for leaking government confidential information, as well as opposition propaganda and exposing government plans even before they are carried out. So he has an insight somehow into what's going on, but what he releases is, you know, according to this article, both a mix of fake news and real news. So, but you know, who knows? Who's it to say what it is? Police have several times detained administrators of the group in their quest to unmask this man or woman, but those attempts have proven futile so far. But the Prime Minister Mafudzwa Metsing has threatened to close down Facebook, claiming that the site perpetuates lies and distorts the truth. The law will criminalize computer and network-related crimes, and you know, I mean, it's going to, you know, make it illegal basically to criticize the government, probably. But that's the way it'll be used. I mean, they claim it's all about, you know, only allowing, you know, the truth to come out. But you know what the reality is they're the government. They don't like this mysterious character giving them a hard time, so they're going to try to pass laws that'll make it easier to find out who he is or she is. But the success of this bill becoming a law relies on the prospects of the post-June 3rd snap elections that are taking place. So we the law has not been put into place yet. We'll have a couple months yet. I'll be sure to report back once we find out. But fake news, not just a problem for here in the United States or in the developed world.
So tell me about Lesotho.
Lesotho.
Yeah.
If I had had time, I was going to look up more about Lesotho and how it became an independent country.
Yeah, like how are they like a little tiny part inside South Africa?
Yeah, I know there's a good reason for it.
Is there no desire of South Africa to just take it? Imagine just like a little
There are countries that are landlocked within other countries. You know, that's, you know, I mean, the Vatican City is a famous example, but it's not the same. Andorra is a tiny country. San Marino, I think, in Italy, I think, or Africa. But there are, you know, there are other instances of this happening. But it's unusual.
It's very interesting. I'm gonna look it up.
Okay, next time we'll report on why Lesotho is. I'm just glad I knew how to pronounce Lesotho.
It looks like Lesotho.
It does look like Lesotho, but I know it's
Lesotho.
I'm pretty sure it's Lesotho, so I'm giving myself credit for that. The pressure's on. I got to get these names right. All right, last one. Last one, we go to another obscure country I'm sure you've never heard of. It's called Scotland. Now, where is this Scotland place anyway? There it is. They didn't have the other templates for Scotland, so it's just the north of England there on the island of Great Britain. So, and the question is this. A Glasgow woman, Glasgow being in Scotland, gained national attention when a video was released of her doing what? And I say national attention in Scotland, I mean. Was it A, dousing her cheating boyfriend's car in gasoline and lighting on a fire? B, catching a hard-boiled egg thrown from 50 meters away in her cleavage? C, giving mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to a pigeon? Or D, claiming to be carrying the illegitimate baby of TYT host Francis Maxwell?
The music is awesome.
Bart, you're on it today.
Yeah.
Very nice. This is a toughie.
I feel extra pressure to get this one right.
Yeah, well, you got the last one wrong, so you're gonna do better than you've ever done before.
Yeah, this is for Bart.
So, all right, so we have our answers.
And
we
John
Ider. An A and a C. If you guys,
John Graziano.
You guys both answered the same on only one of these.
Yeah,
and you got it right. Okay, yeah. So we have an A and a C. What is the correct answer, Irma? The correct answer is C, giving mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to a pigeon. Steve, I'm impressed with you.
I'm so good at this game.
this is not a real story particularly, but there was this woman who attempted to give CPR to a pigeon. Somebody captured it on video, and it got shared tens of thousands of times on social media. And Irma, you know, thoughtful, industrious person that she is, was able to capture the video and use it for us. So let's take a look at this woman giving mouth to mouth to a pigeon.
She's really doing it.
She is really doing it. But this is the sad part comes in. She's trying to give it a little, you know, chest compression.
Oh
my God. Not a happy ending.
Oh.
Sorry. It's a little sad.
That's great.
She was not able to resuscitate the poor pigeon, but that's what's going on in Scotland. You got the I'm trying to come up with these crazy ridiculous things, you know, catching a hard-boiled egg and you know, mm-hmm. you bought the gasoline story potentially.
Yeah.
I mean Probably the most likely is actually carrying Francis's illegitimate child. That's probably,
yeah, that was actually, the funny thing is that was the most reasonable answer. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, not that she would have notoriety for it, but that would have actually happened.
That would happen, yeah. Yeah. He's a good looking guy,
Former footballer.
And he was there recently. Timing is right.
He's going back. So that's Weekly World News, but we're not done yet. We got more games. Because we go all out here on the Friday post game for you. We're also going to play some Totally True or Totally Bullshit with Steve-O and Malcolm Fletcher. Drop it. Yeah, I would love that. All right, so this is how we play. If you haven't seen it before, I will present the panel with a proposition, and they are required to make a determination, is that proposition A, totally true, or B, totally bullshit? And our motto here on Totally True or Totally Bullshit is we don't do what?
Nuance.
We don't do nuance. So it's got, and then we proceed to do nuance. So the first one is about our friend at Fox News, the recently departed Fox News host. What is that, that totally true or totally bullshit? Can you bring it up, please, Irma? We have not heard the last of Bill O'Reilly, and he will soon crop up with a new show, with a show on a different network or other media outlet. Totally true or totally bullshit? I will present this to you first, Steve, because I don't think Dave actually cares.
End of this.
I was going to say, is totally totally irrelevant an option? Totally don't care? I'm going to say totally bullshit.
You're going to say totally bullshit.
Yeah. I think he's so toxic, people can't.
He's done. Well, I mean, it's not really about him. Yeah. It's about what it says about the larger culture and our society and what's beyond the pale and whether he has become so toxic that nobody will want to touch him, even though he's a proven commodity for Fox News. I mean, he's their number one guy, and they're getting rid of him at this point is pretty incredible. So, but you're saying totally bullshit.
Yeah.
He's too toxic.
Two things. A, he's too toxic. And number two, his audience is super old. Super old. So unless you're going to launch a new news network for really, really old people, he's not that valuable.
I'd say not so much totally bullshit, but totally false. Aside from his audience, he's old and rich, and I'm just going to predict he's going to retire and enjoy himself.
Okay, so you say totally bullshit. I'm going to say totally true, and that he's going to crop up somewhere because he's got an ego, and for this to be his swan song, I don't think he's going to tolerate it. And he has plenty of money, and I think there's got to be somebody out there. Can you imagine him on? I'm trying to imagine him on like InfoWars or something. He having to peddle all their doomsday stuff, and because that's what it sells on those networks. That's what Alex Jones is selling, all this ridiculous stuff. But I think somebody is going to want, is going to take a chance on him, and I think it'll be a failure because it's a TV. It's not going to be anybody on TV, on traditional TV or cable TV. It's going to be some sort of internet outfit like The Blaze, or somebody will want it, or he'll find somebody who will put him on air on the internet, and nobody's going to watch because they only watch because it's their pattern and they're watch Fox News, and now they're going to watch Eric Bolling, and they're not even going to notice that he's gone.
I am going to be the cop that stops it. End of this.
But I think essentially the tide has gone out for Bill O'Reilly. But we'll see. This is something we can actually check on, and we'll remember that if he does show up somewhere. And
this exactly was discussed on Wednesday's. All the different options, including politics.
Yeah, and I can't take it anymore. So I actually tweeted, please, let's move off of Bill O'Reilly.
It was about 20 minutes.
Yeah, it was 25 minutes of Bill O'Reilly. I couldn't take it. I was like, please stop.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge story for people in the media, but it's not really that
big. Nobody else cares.
Nothing changes.
Nobody
cares. It has no effect on anything in the world, which is true. It's one of those stories.
Stupid little circle jerk amongst cable news guys. That's it.
Right, but for those people, it's a huge story.
Yeah.
So that's why it gets covered.
End of this.
So let's also stop talking about the next one comes to us from Tom Hank, old TYT employee who intermittently will email me with some suggestions for what we should talk about or suggesting that we look at some link and what do we think about it. Usually somebody criticizing Cenk or somebody calling Cenk a hypocrite or something, and Tom implying that he kind of believes it or agrees. But this one is as follows. Because Trump is viewed as such an existential threat to the planet, strong progressive voices who try to pull the Democratic Party to the left will be tarred by establishment Democrats as obstructionist and divisive, and potentially painted as responsible for giving another victory to the worst president ever. Totally true or totally bullshit. So that's sort of a complicated, extensive one. Basically, the point is the establishment is going to criticize the left if we try to pull the party to a more progressive platform and blame us for re-electing Donald Trump.
Well, it's literally true. It's happening right now.
But it already happened.
Yeah.
So, particularly with the DNC race, I don't know what other.
This is like Cenk saying, "Oh, I'm so buzzed from the coffee, so I'm all wired." I mean, this, yeah, it's happening right now.
But I guess but it does require that to effectively happen.
So
the progressive has to pull the party to the left.
I was on that email chain. I think what Tom's point is not that the establishment will criticize the left, because that's already happening. His point is that because of the establishment's criticism of the left, that the left will actually become less effective, right?
How effective is it?
Already not getting anything done. I mean, already not.
Basically, it's a corollary to Jimmy Dore's thesis. So Jimmy Dore thinks that because Trump is so terrible, the left gets activated and people coalesce around a real progressive agenda rather than the neoliberal bullshit, because people want to give a stark contrast to the Trump agenda. What Tom's proposing is the opposite. Because Trump's agenda is so visibly bad, people are going to settle for anything that's less bad and therefore go more towards establishment neoliberal policies and give that more of a boost.
Because they're safer, and the important thing is to defeat Trump. It doesn't matter, so let's go with what we've tried and true, although it's tried and failed.
Right, so Tom is saying that Jimmy might be totally wrong in his calculations as to how our society will react to the Trump presidency. So it's an interesting take on it, and God, I hope Jimmy's right and Tom is wrong. But totally true, totally bullshit, I don't know.
I mean, we get punished no matter. I mean, as long if Trump wins and the establishment does manage to marginalize the left and maintain the neoliberal agenda, and Trump wins again or Republicans maintain their power, then the left will get blamed anyway.
Yeah.
So the only possible, and then if you're one of those people who like Jimmy and me, and I think you probably think that the Democratic Party's chances of success are dependent on adopting actual progressive policies. If you think that, and then the Democratic Party moves to the left and then loses to Donald Trump, well, they're definitely gonna blame the left, of course.
Yeah, well, what's gonna happen is most likely the Democratic establishment will not move left.
Right.
It'll stay split, and then they may lose to Trump again.
Yeah.
And in which case, the two factions will blame each other, and they'll be both largely correct. But the real problem, I mean, obviously I agree with you and Jimmy, we have to have actual progressive policies that actually matter to people and actually help the American public rather than just giving lip service the way the neoliberal policies have done for decades.
All right, but Tom, if we misunderstood you, you can post in the comments section and give us your take on it, what you were actually meant to say and why we were all completely wrong. All right, so here's another one. The next one we have is another just a fluffy personality one. It's Steve Bannon will depart the Trump administration before Sean Spicer. Totally true or totally bullshit? Now, lately there's been a lot of talk about both of these guys as two whose heads are potentially on the chopping block. Steve Bannon because he's been marginalized and Jared Kushner doesn't like him and he's too much of the alt-right, and Trump is going much more establishment standard conservative policies, and Sean Spicer because he's just incompetent and the Holocaust comments and so on and so forth. So a lot of people have been saying that he's got to go and it's going to happen any day now. A lot of people are saying Steve Bannon is done and he's got to go. So the proposal is that Steve Bannon will go first. Totally true or totally bullshit?
I'm going to go with totally true.
So you say?
Yeah, I think it's because Trump values loyalty above competence. So yeah, Sean Spicer, incompetent, he's a clown. But Trump doesn't care. He sees a guy fighting for Trump and he's okay with that. Bannon has real issues there. I mean, he's really losing his favor and his his power and his leverage. And Trump has already kind of thrown him under the bus a couple of times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how long can Bannon stay?
Well, there's the side of it that Bannon comes from the Mercer money, and that's Trump's, you know, his big backers. And Steve Bannon's only there because of Rebecca Mercer, and they, you know, she controls the purse strings. And so that would
I'm a little bit surprised by that. I mean, why are the Mercers so tied to Bannon? That seemed weird to me.
Well, there's a lot of history, and you can actually, Jane Mayer in The New Yorker wrote a super interesting article about the Mercer family, and they're relatively newcomers to politics, but they're billionaire, or he's a billionaire, but they didn't like the Koch brothers and what a lot of the other sort of more traditional conservatives who've given money to the Republicans were doing, because they thought they weren't getting anything done. They wanted to get it done now, and that's why they got on the alt-right Bannon Trump sort of bandwagon. They were like, this is happening. This is something that's, you know, moving and going to actually get these things accomplished, potentially. But I recommend it. Jane Mayer, I mean, she's super awesome anyway. But all right, so you say Steve Bannon goes first.
Yeah.
Dave?
Yeah, I agree. He's headstrong. Sean Spicer will comply. He'll do what Trump orders him to, or continue being a clown as Trump desires. He's the fool.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting is traditionally in Washington, once somebody is, you know, in the administration or wherever, it gets a bad rap and the press starts talking about, oh, you know, heads are going to roll, he's doing a terrible job, he's got to go, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And the administration, I mean, Obama was like that, you know, with like Shirley Sherrod. As soon as there was a video release, even when it was doctored, he was like ready to get rid of her. Mm-hmm. But Trump, he's like, but there were like 8 billion things that happened during the campaign that should have been disqualifiers for Trump, where the press was all like, oh, well, that's it for Trump. He can't survive this. There's no way. And they say the same thing about Sean Spicer, but I'm like, why can't he keep on saying that, you know, whatever, you know, his idiotic Holocaust comments about, you know, the Germans didn't use any chemical weapons, or, you know, or other things that are similarly inane, as long as he's not undermining Trump in any way.
Right.
And he's actually maybe deflecting attention off of Trump and onto him. So Trump may be like, sure, as long as you want to keep doing this, put on that bunny suit and get out there.
Lightning rod.
Yeah. So I agree. So we're all in agreement that Spicer's the last one to go. All right. We got one more, and this one is not politics, but in 50 years, many of the rules of English grammar, spelling, and syntax, as we know them today, will have been abandoned. Totally true or totally bullshit. And let's see who's up next. Are you up, Steve? No, you went first last time. Dave, I'm going to pose that to you.
More or less totally true. I don't know who governs English. It's not like France where there's an academy.
Yeah.
But however it's done, whether it's informal or formal, yes. In 50 years, considering some of those rules of syntax and grammar are obscure and pointless, yeah, they'll be gone.
But okay. Steve, what do you think?
This is so non-controversial. Of course, it's totally true.
I'm talking about like subject-verb agreement. I mean, like in a way that you have not seen. I mean, language always grows and changes, of course. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about sweeping, like many. I'm not talking about some of the rules. I'm talking about many of the rules. Like almost all. Like it's all out the window, and communication will just be however, you know, whatever you want to say. You know, the word you, YOU, will be entirely replaced by the letter U potentially. Like things like that.
Well, yes, I think it's already happening. So, you know, I was confused on the proper pronoun for trans people, and you're supposed to use they and there. So is it there? So they is coming to dinner tonight, or they are coming? I don't know.
Well, there's no rule, right? Yeah, you said there's no governing rule. Body. Yeah, there have been various things that have been proposed. One of them is like XI, you know, XI is supposed to be potential. But right there, this is a way that the language is changing in a you know, that people are debating and discussing how the language should move forward, whether we should do it. Whereas most changes just sort of happen and there's no consensus and nobody discusses them. They just, you know, they just come over the country or the, you know, the English speaking world in this way.
I mean, things like spelling and syntax will absolutely change, of course. And there'll be words invented and words that are sunsetted. But there will be, in terms of grammar, things like subject verb agreement is happening right now with this issue of pronouns. So I could see things happening faster. I mean, changes are happening faster and faster these days. So.
And this is one thing that I noticed, because I work with a lot of our Facebook people who do Facebook original videos, which seem like Haas and Francis and Hannah. And one of the things that I've been seeing more often, and I actually edit them. I edit the scripts to make them grammatically correct or help them improve their grammar and so on and so forth. And one of the things I've been seeing is just not putting a period at the end of a sentence and just going right into the next sentence.
Yeah.
And that, you mean, like, that's inconceivable to me that you would write something and just not even bother to put a period at the end of the sentence and just keep going to the next sentence. But I see it, you know, when blog posts and other places, and there's no the copy editing and proofreading is out the window. Everything's got to be out now, and newspapers aren't paying copy
editors. It drives me crazy, actually. Because
right, but we're old.
We're old. Well, not only am I old, but I'm also legally trained, right? Yeah. So, like, my eye goes straight to what's wrong. You know, I can't help but not, you know, help but see it. So even if there's like two spaces between a word, I'm like, there's an extra space there, right? You know, things like improper use of semicolon versus a comma. It bothers me a little bit, right? And I have to realize, come on, like, grandpa.
So the question is,
well, it depends on what it is you're talking about. If you're writing a contract up, obviously you have to get it right. But if you're just sending an email to somebody or something, are you saying judge people who email you?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. We're in outer space.
No, look, if it's a text or a tweet or something like that, I don't care, right? I mean, there's only to be a grammar police. But if someone is sending me an email that's work-related and it has to, what's with the camera?
Steve's talking. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. And if it has to deal with something that's a business deal, it to me seems very unprofessional if you write with improper grammar, you know, bad syntax, poor punctuation marks. It tells me that you're not serious or careful about this.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like a smart person.
So the question is, in 50 years, let's say you're an eighth grade English teacher and the door is closed in your classroom and someone knocks and you say, who's there? And the kid says, it's me. Is the teacher going to say, no, it's you have to say, it is I. Will that be
Nobody
happening?
Nobody says that now.
No one does that happen now.
They don't teach grammar like they used to. You don't break down sentences. They don't do that stuff anymore.
If you are in school and you write it to me, the teachers will correct that. Well, then.
No. They do correct that. If you're writing that in an essay,
of course it gets
corrected.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe.
But by the way, it drives me crazy even here with our hosts, our producers, our staff, when they use just horrendous grammar. When they say things like, Dave gave the pizza to Malcolm and I, right?
Yeah, they're trying to be correct and they end up being wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, people who misuse whom, who say whom when they're not supposed to.
No, that's one that could go out the door because that's ridiculous. It's not important. It doesn't even sound jarring if you use who instead of whom or whom instead of
that's
who.
Fine. But the I versus the me, that's a little bit annoying.
There's also, and this is something I deal with my kids, beginning a sentence with the word me. Me and somebody did something.
Yeah, well, that's what Steve's talking about.
Yeah. But that's even more egregious, I think, than, you know, they gave it to him and me.
By the way, I'm super annoying. I correct my kids every single time. I'm like, no. I was like, I know it's annoying, but I'm going to tell you what the right way is. You don't have to always use it, but I'm just letting you know so you know what the right grammar is.
But for me, I don't understand. There's no time when you ever begin a sentence with the word me.
Yeah.
You know, unless it's in quotes, you're saying me is a word that is often used when you should use the word I.
That's what your point is. Is a word change? It's just easy. For some reason, most
because we're self-centered. We're self-centered. You're always going
to
begin with yourself.
To say me as a subject pronoun.
So it's like, hey, me and Malcolm are going to head over to the bar later. Like, would that bother you?
It would definitely bother me. The question is, will it bother the?
But 50 years from now, it's not going to bother. No.
Are we the three oldest people here at TYT? I'm actually being serious. I think we are.
No,
no, Ben's older than us.
Ben's Jake is 3 days older than I am. No,
we should probably wrap it up.
Yeah, but this is a legitimate question for us as a media company because we produce content and we have our hosts. Not only are they speaking, but off the cuff it's not as bad. But we also produce scripted content and those Facebook originals that Francis and Haas and those others produce. Anna often become they're published on Huffington Post or Anna writes on Raw Story, you know, and so. That's we're seeing it in print, where I think it's even more important. It's much more important,
for sure.
That's when it bugs me. But it could be, you know, even 20 years from now, places, you know, these online outlets, it just doesn't matter, and they don't care. Like you could even point it out to them, and be like, "What are you talking about? Who cares? It doesn't matter."
As long as the point gets across.
Yeah, I mean, and it's easy to get your point across using poor grammar and the like. It's not like we're saying if you say me and somebody went to the bar last night that you're not going to understand what they're talking about, but I think for us, we come from a certain generation and a certain education level. It doesn't matter, but we're the ones who are becoming obsolete, and we're the ones who have to adjust. unfortunately. And it's not as big a priority for us as it is, I mean, for other people as it is for us. And that's hard because...
Maybe what we should do, you know, from now on at TYT for hiring purposes, give them a little essay to write. And if they make more than three mistakes, they're out.
Then nobody's going to get hired.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, we did that test where we gave a bunch of the people who worked here the map of the United States. With all 50 states on, you know, demarked but not labeled. And people got like, you know,
that was
half
so sad.
Of them. And it's like, how can you not know what the 50 states are? It's like, I'm from Philadelphia. I never really went and traveled in the middle of the country.
Rick Strom got like 32 right out of the 50. I'm like, come on, Rick. I know you're a sports guy, but come on, really.
Right. Sports people should know more because you know.
Yeah, you know, with the American League West and the National League East and so on and so forth, you would think. But
oh, yeah, I forgot all about Idaho. There are no teams there.
But the reality is, if you're an editor, a video editor working for the Young Turks, it doesn't matter one, you know, half a shit that you can, you know, identify where Idaho is. It doesn't matter. But it makes us think this person is uneducated. But it doesn't, you know, it's not important anymore. But, you know, you can look anything up. So,
except right, some new rule: if you get more than one question wrong during Weekly World News, you're fired. Sorry, Dave.
I hope you guys did well at home. We do have to go. We're getting kicked out of here. Have a great weekend.
Leave your comments below. I'm gonna read them next week.
Yes. Thank you very much. And as always, remember,
stay strong.